Hello, welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the next hour, reminding you that we're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. We try to cover a wide range of subjects on health, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. So the show is about you. And we are streamed through myvillagegreen.com. So if you want to listen to some of the previous shows, go into the archives. It's myvillagegreen.com. Now this evening, we always start with news you can use, and then we'll move to our guest, who's James Brodsky, MD. And Dr. Brodsky is going to talk to us about sleep, the many aspects of sleep, including the causes, evaluations for sleep insomnia problems, and nutritional and natural approaches. And that's what this show likes to focus on. And we will talk about the medications as well. So we're talking about sleep quality and insomnia. So let's go to some news that you can use. Interesting topic on grapefruit. Many of you who take medications know that some medications have a warning to avoid grapefruit, and there's a reason for that. Grapefruit, especially grapefruit juice, has a concentration of a compound called naringin, which becomes naringenin. And what that does is it interferes with something called cytochrome P450s, and these are enzymes that metabolize not just medications and toxins, they metabolize many of our own byproducts, including estrogen. So it was not a surprise to find that in a study of 46,000 postmenopausal women, those who ate at least one quarter of a grapefruit daily, and that's not very much, they had a 30% higher risk for breast cancer than women who had no grapefruit at all. And we've always considered grapefruit and grapefruit juice healthy. Now, why would this be the case, that there's a 30% higher risk for breast cancer if you consume grapefruit daily? And grapefruit juice was not studied, but it is well understood that grapefruit juice has concentrations that are higher of this naringin. And the theory is exactly what we spoke about. The compounds in the grapefruit inhibit the metabolism of the hormone estrogen, the ridding of the hormone, and it leads to higher levels circulating in the body. So until more research is done, and we always say we need more research, postmenopausal women and those diagnosed with estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, in which estrogen influences the growth of breast tumors, may want to substitute other fruit for grapefruit. Very interesting. Now, let's go on to a nicer, a touchy-feely subject, the healing powers of touch. And I wanted to talk a little bit about massage. I am a massage junkie, and I consider it necessary for health, necessary for human health on this earth. And massage has gained a lot of respect in the medical community in the last decade especially. And now nearly 60% of doctors in the U.S. recommend massage for some patients, almost twice as many as recommended 5 years ago. So that's a pretty dramatic increase. And the reason is that therapeutic massage used to be recommended for muscle aches and pains, arthritis, low back pain, muscle tension, for which it is very helpful. But now there's actually credible research that shows massage has benefits that most doctors never expected. So what do we know about massage? Scientists now have the evidence that massage affects virtually every major body function, from immunity to lung function, brain function, and it gives health benefits through a whole variety of mechanisms. Even though massage therapists can be trained in one or more massage techniques, such as Swedish, Shiatsu, deep tissue, massage, there's no evidence that one technique is any better than another for most conditions. And studies indicate that the application of this moderate pressure, firm enough to make an indentation in the skin, is the key to massage's health benefits and by stimulating pressure receptors under the skin, massage activates different branches of what's called the vagus nerve, and that regulates blood pressure, heart rate, and many other functions. So naturally, people who get massage are going to have better blood pressures. And so if you've got high blood pressure, massage is just what the doctor ordered. And it not only lowers blood pressure, it lowers stress hormones. And the main stress hormone is cortisol. When we have massage, that stress hormone goes right downhill. And that's what we're looking for. And any of you that have had a massage know that after a massage, you feel just so good and so relaxed and so mellow. So it's not hard to understand. Another thing that massage does, and it goes right into what we're talking about on the show today, is that it enhances deeper sleep stages, and that's called delta sleep. And it helps reduce levels of a brain chemical known as substance P, not a very innovative name, that is related to the sensation of pain. That's what the P stands for. And this is why with massage, if you've ever had a massage, when you go home to go to sleep, you sleep very, very well. Another oddity is that it helps carpal tunnel syndrome, and it is widely used now to help alleviate carpal tunnel syndrome. And a daily self-massage can reduce the pain and promote an increase in nerve conduction velocity. And that's measurable, that the nerve conduction velocity absolutely improves with just daily self-massage. And massage therapists can certainly teach people how to do that. And pain, let's go back to that substance P and pain. Studies show that massage curbs back pain, migraine, and cancer pain. And it does this by reducing that pain-promoting chemical substance P. And some key findings in three separate studies, patients with back pain were treated either with massage or a sham treatment. And that was interesting to me because I don't know how you do a placebo, but it was a massage with insufficient pressure to provide any benefit. Patients in both groups were treated twice weekly for 20 minutes. Those in the massage group consistently had less pain and better range of motion than patients in the sham group. So that was pretty significant. It also is very beneficial for post-surgical pain, and this was a pilot study. Researchers at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles found that patients who received massages after heart bypass surgery had less pain, that's less pain, and fewer muscle spasms than those who did not get massages. So when you get a massage, make sure it's a massage therapist from the American Massage Therapy Association. I just am glad to start the new year out with some good advice. So if you haven't had a massage, now's the time to get one. Relieve your stresses. I want to remind you that you're listening to The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the day. We are sponsored by Village Green Apothecary. Please stay with us because we will be right back talking with James Brodsky, MD, about sleep. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the day, and we're here every Saturday morning. I want to remind you, we switch to Saturday mornings with the new year, and it's 10 a.m. I am very pleased to introduce James Brodsky, MD. He's our guest for today, and we're going to be talking about sleep, insomnia, evaluations, nutritional approaches, natural approaches, and sleep medications. So he's been on the show before. It's always very interesting. Welcome to the show, Dr. Brodsky.
Glad to be here, Dana.
Well, we're glad to have you. Tell us a little bit about your practice, first of all. I think it's always interesting for our listeners to know who they're listening to.
Dana, my practice is an integrative model using methods that are more conventional and Western-type therapies and integrating them with complementary holistic methods of healing.
Well, I know that about you because you're my physician, but I wanted our listeners to know about that, and I just think that you do a wonderful job of combining both and truly have an integrative approach. Besides being an excellent troubleshooter and figuring out very complex things about patients. So we're glad to have you.
Glad to be here, Dana.
Now, let's go into our subject about sleep and about insomnia.
You know, sleep, it helps us to conserve energy, and it also is a time when we recharge our immune system. So it's very important that we not ignore sleep disorders. In recent years, I'm sure your listeners know, sleep centers have become very popular throughout our area and throughout the world because we've learned more about sleep disorders, how to evaluate, and how to treat them. Just to kind of have an introduction into the sleep, it's important to know that sleep disturbances are caused by an imbalance in the awake chemicals and the sleep chemicals, the awake chemicals being adrenaline and noradrenaline, the sleep chemicals primarily GABA, which stands for gamma-aminobutyric acid, and serotonin. I think you're all also aware that there are different stages of sleep. Stage one sleep is where we're kind of between being awake and asleep. It's a time when there's a release of the sleep chemicals GABA and serotonin, which prepare the brain for sleep. We move into stage two sleep, which is a little bit deeper sleep, and that leads us into the deepest phases of sleep, stage three and four, and this is where most of the restorative sleep occurs. It's thought that the brain chemical GABA plays its most important role in stage three and stage four. REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, occurs throughout the night. It alternates with the non-REM sleep, and lasts for approximately 1 to 2 hours, and that's where most of our dreams occur during this REM phase of sleep. So when we have disrupted sleep, usually it results in problems during the day because daytime fatigue is a common problem in people who have disordered sleep, and also the inability to concentrate, inability to problem solve and make decisions. So when someone complains of fatigue or poor concentration, one of the first things that we need to think about is this person having trouble sleeping. It may be difficulty falling asleep, difficulty maintaining sleep, or waking up too early in the morning. There are many things that can cause sleep disorders that are easily correctable. Probably the most common cause of sleep disturbance is too much caffeine. Many people who drink coffee or eat chocolate or drink tea do it after 12 o'clock. They don't just have a morning cup of coffee, but they're drinking it at lunch, often in the afternoon or in the evening. And caffeine is one of the more common causes of correctable sleep disturbances. Alcohol also can cause sleep disturbances, and certain medications, particularly the cold medications that contain phenylephrine or pseudoephedrine. These decongestants do cause an increase in the brain excitatory chemicals, adrenaline and noradrenaline. Anxiety, depression, these are very common causes of sleep disturbances. Low estrogen, which can cause night sweats, very common in women around the time of menopause. Prostate problems in men. Urinary frequency, getting up at night to go to the bathroom. In women, we call it overactive bladder. But if you got to get up and go to the bathroom two or three times during the night, you're just not going to get a restful sleep. Bad dreams can cause poor sleep. Restless leg syndrome, another topic that has gained some importance recently due to new research. It's a much more common disorder than we ever thought before. It causes an urge to move the arms and legs, often when trying to fall asleep or during the night. This restless leg syndrome can often be diagnosed by the spouse by kicking or jerking movements from your bed partner. But it is also something that's correctable, either through medication or by finding out what the underlying cause of restless leg syndrome might be. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the second segment, but I wanted to just go over a couple other causes of poor sleep, and that would be sleep apnea. That, too, I think we're going to talk about later. But pain would be another very common problem that causes sleep disturbances. It may be arthritis pain, fibromyalgia. Some people wake up at night with headaches. So we always have to ask these questions when trying to evaluate someone who's complaining of a sleep disturbance or daytime fatigue, which is otherwise unexplained.
Well, you've really covered it thoroughly. I always refer to sleep as a nutrient. And sometimes when we get into a history with a patient, as soon as I find out they have insomnia, they don't sleep well, it's easy to understand the cluster of symptoms. And I always emphasize the importance of addressing sleep if they're going to get well. Also, one of the complaints I hear from people that can interrupt sleep, as you well know, is the reflux problems, especially if people have eaten too soon before going to bed.
Mm-hmm. Gastroesophageal reflux is, I'm glad you mentioned that, another medical condition that can interrupt sleep. Often it's associated with nighttime coughing, which can be disruptive, heartburn, waking up at night with discomfort in the chest. And that's certainly one more thing we should think about. That's good.
And also the environment, the room, the darkness, the noise, the interruptions. So there's a lot to think about with regard to sleep. What about evaluating after you've talked to patients, Dr. Brodsky, about their sleep problems? When is it proper to do an evaluation? How do you determine which evaluations?
Well, we go down this checklist of possible causes of sleep disorders. We just listed most of them. There are other ones, as you point out, such as noise in the room, perhaps even an allergic environment that might need to be addressed. It's quite a long and exhaustive list. But once you've gone through that and you've determined that, you know, this is not a coffee-related problem, it's not an anxiety problem, it's not a urinary tract problem, if you're really at loss for trying to figure this out, at that point I think it's appropriate to make a referral to one of the sleep centers. Once this referral is made, generally an evaluation is repeated at the sleep center, and a sleep study is set up where the individual spends a night in the center being monitored for breathing disorders that may occur during sleep.
So what they're looking for is whether they have restful sleep or not.
That's right. The studies that are done will determine the type of brain waves and the amount of REM sleep that occurs. It will also determine the number of breathing disorders, how many times the patient may stop breathing and for how long during the night. You also detect restless legs or periodic leg movements. This is also monitored in a sleep study. So for people who don't know that their legs are moving and jumping during the night, this can be detected through such an evaluation.
And when they have that evaluation, who prescribes for them based on the findings?
Well, it's done in one of two ways. Either the prescription for treatment is done by the sleep specialist, or the patient is referred back to their primary care doctor for the treatment. If the treatment involves what we call CPAP or positive pressure breathing for the treatment of sleep apnea, that prescription generally comes from the sleep specialist.
Well, we're going to talk more about CPAP and evaluations in the next segment. I want to remind our listeners they're listening to The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, and we are talking with James Brodsky, MD, about sleep quality, evaluations, natural approaches, and medications. Please stay with us. We will be back right after this break. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to The Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by Village Green. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the hour, and we've been having a discussion on sleep with James Brodsky, MD, internist, who has an integrative practice, an integrative medical practice. We've talked about some of the many causes of sleep disturbance, from pain, medications, restless legs, alcohol, medications such as ephedrine, anxiety, depression, and the list goes on. And now we're into the discussion of evaluations. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Brodsky.
I'm right here with you, Dana.
Good. We talked about CPAP. It would be helpful to explain a little bit more how CPAP works. I find it very interesting, and patients often have a lot of questions about what the CPAP is.
To try to explain it simply, it's a way of delivering oxygen under pressure. People with sleep apnea often have obstructive components to their breathing, either because they may be overweight or they have an enlarged soft palate that obstructs the flow of air as they breathe during the night. You know, when you're lying down on your back, things tend to drop back into the part of your throat and your airway where you breathe. And some people, because of this, snore. Many snorers have an obstructive component to their breathing. So it's one of the first things we ask when trying to evaluate sleep disorders: do you snore? And has anyone ever observed a breathing disturbance where you either gasp or stop breathing for periods of time during the night? So if in fact sleep apnea is the diagnosis after an appropriate sleep study, one of the treatments that we recommend is the application of a mask over the face that delivers positive pressure so that the air and oxygen is delivered under pressure to overcome the obstruction.
Well, what I've found with patients is they say it's like they woke up. They feel so much better. And to me, what they're doing in the night with apnea is they're suffocating multiple times, and naturally that's going to be hard on the brain, and the oxygen being delivered really wakes that brain up. So it's a big difference, isn't it?
When the diagnosis is correct and you confirm that this is sleep apnea, the application of the CPAP device can certainly turn one's life around. I should mention, to be fair, that there are other treatments for obstructive sleep apnea. Some of these involve dental appliances, which can pull the lower jaw forward, relieving the obstruction. There's some other techniques where we can remove parts of the small, soft palate to reduce the tissue that's causing the obstruction in the back of the throat. So there are a variety of different approaches. I do think that the CPAP is probably the most common and most effective, but not everyone can tolerate having a mask on their face at night. So it's nice to have other options.
It is, and there's also some noise with it, so the partner may or may not be able to handle it, although most tell me that it's a soft, kind of a white noise, not unpleasant.
Generally it is, and you get very used to it. It's kind of like having a sound machine next to you, and after a while you learn to just adapt to that, and most spouses tolerate it quite well.
Well, we mentioned restless legs, and that is something that we hear more frequently now, especially on advertisements. Can you give us a better description for our listeners as to what restless legs syndrome is and what causes it?
Well, I can do that, Dana, and I think it's good we talk about restless legs because it's probably a lot more common than we think. 60% of restless leg syndrome tends to run in families, and so often you get a family history of this if you look for that. As I had said in the first segment, restless leg syndrome is usually defined as an urge to move parts of the body. Generally, it's in bed, but it can be during the day when one is sitting down. It's often a response to try to stop uncomfortable sensations in the body. It may be tingling or itching or burning, usually in the feet. However, some people have no sensations at all. They just move the body. And, of course, that's going to disrupt sleep if it occurs in the middle of the night. You're going to have trouble falling asleep if it happens when you get into bed and you're trying to fall asleep. Well, let me go over a couple of the causes of this. I think it's important to recognize that this syndrome can be treated, particularly if you identify what the cause of it is. One of the things we have found is that there is about 20% of people with restless leg syndrome have low iron in a part of the brain called the substantia nigra. And this is where dopamine is manufactured, and iron is an important cofactor in the formation of dopamine. So if we identify that this is an iron deficiency, replacing iron, such a very easy thing to do, this alone can correct maybe 20% of restless leg syndrome.
Isn't it interesting that iron deficiency gives this effect, and it's the effect from the brain? It's actually not coming from the muscles in the legs. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's exactly correct. This is not due to a peripheral disturbance. This is a central disturbance, but it does cause the arms and the legs to move about due to the fact that there is a deficiency in dopamine. And it is that low dopamine level which causes these uncontrollable movements in the arms and the legs. And that's one of the reasons that we can use DOPA, the same drug we use for Parkinson's disease, to treat restless leg syndrome.
And it is effective.
It is definitely effective. There are some other treatments that have become more popular because one of the problems with using levodopa in the treatment of restless legs is that it can cause a rebound, so that if you take it at night, you sleep well during the night, but then you have these leg movements during the day. And so that's something that can become very tricky in the treatment of this disorder. And that's why some other medications have become more commonly used. One is called ropinirole, which is Requip. The other is Mirapex. Sometimes we use benzodiazepine drugs like Ativan, Valium, and Xanax, but there's a more natural treatment with magnesium, which probably works in a significant number of patients with restless leg syndrome. So that's one of the things we may try in more mild cases. But I want to go back to some of the other causes, because those two are treatable. For example, thyroid disease. Particularly overactive thyroid can cause restless leg syndrome. That has to be identified and appropriately treated. Also, varicose veins, certainly a very common disorder in women. Correcting varicose veins can also cure the restless leg syndrome.
Now, that's interesting, because there is a medical basis for having varicose veins treated. That's fascinating.
Peripheral neuropathy often causes a sense of tingling or burning in the legs. That may occur with diabetes. It can occur with vitamin B12 deficiency. Treating the neuropathy will often eliminate the restless legs, because, again, that urge to move the legs around is often secondary to the uncomfortable sensations in the legs. So if you can identify the cause of the sensations and cure or eliminate those sensations, then you can also eliminate the restless leg syndrome.
Does this syndrome occur very frequently in younger people, or is it more associated with people over 40 or 50?
Well, there is one group of young people that do get restless leg syndrome. Those who are pregnant, it is more common in pregnancy. It is more common in menstruating females who have low iron levels. It's also common in young people with low blood sugar or hypoglycemia.
So it's not isolated to the older folks?
It certainly is not.
And it's interesting, with pregnancy, I would immediately think of magnesium as being an important issue, and most of the prenatal supplements do not have enough magnesium. I'm sure there are other reasons, hormonal, for the restless leg syndrome with pregnancy as well.
During pregnancy, you're going to want to avoid the medications, and of course, magnesium would be the first choice in a pregnant female.
And certainly very safe. Well, we're going to come back for the next segment and talk a little bit more about solutions, both natural and medicinal. And I'm reminding our listeners, we've been talking with James Brodsky, MD, local here in Chevy Chase, Maryland. And he is an internist in an integrative medicine practice. And we will be back after this break talking more about sleep and insomnia and solutions. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the hour, and on this, our last segment, we're going to wind up our interesting discussion on sleep and insomnia. I just wanted to inject a little humor. It's a comment by Milton Berle, one of my favorite comedians. His comment is, "My doctor told me that jogging would add years to my life. I think he's right. I already feel 10 years older." So we try to make fun of ourselves on the show as well. So we're here talking with James Brodsky, MD, about sleep and insomnia. And we've certainly covered a lot about the causes and understanding of restless leg syndrome, which Dr. Brodsky, I thought that was very interesting. I always learn a lot on the show, and I've certainly learned a lot myself today. So let's talk about some of the natural remedies and some of the medicinal remedies as well for sleep disturbances.
Dana, maybe we should just start with food, because oftentimes what we put in our mouth in the evening before we go to bed can affect our ability to fall asleep or not fall asleep. So let me just review a couple of the foods which tend to cause sleep disorders, those particularly that contain caffeine, like chocolate, obviously coffee and tea, but also foods that have a high tyramine content can cause insomnia. Those include things like chocolate, cheese, even eggplant, ham, potatoes, sausage, spinach, tomatoes, and red wine. Some of these one might not even begin to think about as causing a sleep disturbance. But again, that's on the checklist that we have to go over when we're trying to figure out a difficult problem of insomnia. There are certain foods that we use to treat sleep. And in fact, those foods tend to be high in tryptophan, and they help to induce sleep. Certain foods like turkey, bananas, dates, figs, milk, tuna, whole grain crackers, and even yogurt is high in tryptophan and can promote sleep. Well, having said that, there are a number of very natural herbal and botanical formulas that we use and try before going to medication, and I'd like to review with you a few of those. Perhaps one that we use most commonly is 5-hydroxytryptophan. This is an amino acid precursor. It's a precursor to serotonin, and taken before bedtime at a dose of 100 milligrams, which is a typical dose that we would use, is often very effective in helping people fall asleep and stay asleep.
It is very effective. I agree with you. That's a first-line supplement.
The second one we would think about is GABA, gamma-aminobutyrate butyric acid, which I mentioned earlier. This is also technically an amino acid, which is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. It causes relaxation and helps to induce sleep. A dose of about 250 milligrams is an average dose for GABA, although sometimes higher doses will be more effective. And certain people seem to be very responsive to the use of GABA alone. Sometimes we'll combine it with 5-hydroxytryptophan, and sometimes we'll combine it with melatonin. Well, melatonin is a naturally occurring hormone that is important in the regulation of a circadian rhythm. It's secreted by a gland in our brain called the pineal gland, and some people are deficient in melatonin, and it is those people who respond the best to melatonin in a dose which can be as low as 1 milligram, as high as 5 or 6 milligrams, usually taken 2 to 3 hours before bedtime. We also use melatonin for jet lag, and it's remarkably effective for that. There's an herb called valerian. A valerian root by itself or in combination with other nutrients can be very effective. One of the nice combination formulas that contains valerian is the Healthy Sleep Support formula by Pathway. This contains both valerian, skullcap, hops. It contains theanine, Ziziphus, and magnolia, which as a combination, these all of these individually, but more importantly in combination, can be used effectively for treating sleep disorders without the need for medication.
And that Healthy Sleep Support by Pathways of Village Green is actually quite effective for people who have tried a lot of other approaches and have not been successful.
That's right. That's right. And I think it's a great formula. Pathway also has an additional formula called Relaxation Support, which is similar, except it has chamomile and passion flower. These herbal products can be used in this combination called relaxation support, or you can get passion flower tea and drink that alone before bedtime for mild sleep disorders. A cup of tea such as chamomile or passion flower by itself can be very effective. Sometimes we'll combine the tea with 100 milligrams of 5-hydroxytryptophan. That makes a nice combination. So there are lots of ways to mix and match these natural approaches, and probably half the time this is all you need without having to go to medication.
Well, that's always beneficial, and most of our patients do like that approach. I know that Zymogen Cetylin is very similar to Pathway's sleep support. And they both have, I love to say this one, Ziziphus.
Ziziphus and Magnolia. Cetylin is a great product by Zymogen, and that's often something that we'll use for sleep disorders as well. Then there's medication. I think before we close the show tonight, it's important to know that for very resistant sleep problems that don't respond to natural approaches, we'll often use over-the-counter diphenhydramine, which is Benadryl. There is another medication, trazodone, which is an antidepressant, which can be very effective for certain sleep disorders. And then the highly promoted Lunesta and Ambien can be effective, too, in those people who are resistant to the more natural approaches to treatment.
I'm glad you mentioned those, and people who are on these, one of the tricky parts of nutritional counseling is working with the physician in trying to bring in some of the natural agents. Like GABA can work in the same area as, say, a Valium. So if the patient's on Valium, we have to be cautious with using GABA. So I just want to let our listeners know that that can be tricky, whereas the use of something like magnesium or theanine is going to have less interference.
Those are good points, and I think that's a reason why it's probably good to work with some type of professional who understands the interactions between medications, drugs, herbs, and nutrients, because oftentimes things don't always mix and match appropriately.
That is so true. I have also found that the patients that benefit the most from GABA tend to be those with the anxiety presentation, the phobias, the worriers, the fears, nightmares, obsessive compulsive issues, as compared with the 5-HTP.
Yeah, that's so true. And Dana, it's also important just before we close to mention some of the very obvious things about exercising regularly, how important that is in promoting sleep, being sure that the bedroom is comfortable and quiet, trying to not stay in bed unless you're sleepy. That's not a good habit to get into. Only use the bed when you're ready to go to sleep. Try not to nap during the day. Oftentimes, that's going to be one of the problems with falling asleep at night if you've napped for an hour or two during the day, and try to establish a good sleep time that you keep to night after night, because a regular pattern of sleep is going to help you to fall asleep better and will help to avoid problems with insomnia.
Well, you certainly completed this. I feel like we've given our listeners a course in sleep and sleep insomnia approaches. Thank you very much, Dr. Brodsky, for being with us, and I hope you'll come back again.
My pleasure, Dana.
Well, that was interesting, and I hope you have learned how important sleep is. I call sleep a nutrient. It feeds the immune system, and it feeds your intelligence and your alertness and your sharpness and your mood. So that's one of the kind things you can do for yourself this year, is get excellent sleep. I also want to remind you to go on myvillagegreen.com and go green with Village Green. You can get involved in green energy. They have lots of information. And I want to thank you for joining us and remind you to tune in on Progressive Talk AM 1260 every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by Village Green. Remember to take care of yourself and at least one other person. This is Dana Lake and Village Green wishing each and every one of you good health and a great day.